The Ten Commandments are the basis of a lot of our societal laws. You know, Exodus chapter 20 says, "And then God spake all these words, saying," God spoke them, God said them. And they have such a basis for our world that many people believe that they were given all the way back at the beginning to Adam and Eve. Reasonable minds can differ on this, of course, but I ask the question, did God give the Ten Commandments to Adam and Eve? How many commandments did God give to Adam and Eve? Well, let's ask the question. When I read the scriptures of Genesis chapter 2, I see two commands, really, just basically two. Here they are, Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. "Then the eternal God took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to cultivate it and to keep it." Now, that was the purpose. I don't know if he commanded the man, doesn't say the words commanded the man to do it, but he said he put him in there for the purpose of cultivating it and keeping it. And then in verse 16, the eternal commanded the man, saying, "From any tree of the garden you may eat freely. Help yourself to all the trees of the garden, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat." Now there's the command. "You shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat from it, you will surely die." There's God's command. There's God's statement. Two commands for Adam and Eve. But people will say, well, no, I know that he must have given them, he had to have given them the Ten Commandments. I ask the question, why would he have to give them the Ten Commandments? Why would Adam and Eve need the Ten Commandments? Well, let's go through them for just a moment. Let's see if we apply the Ten Commandments. I'm going to do it, you know, the Protestant commandments rather than the Catholic commandments. So they split one command into two things and they leave out another. But let's go through the Ten Commandments as we know them. The first command, of course, "You shall have no other gods before me." That's in verse 3 of Exodus, chapter 20. "You shall have no other gods before me." Now, first of all, with Adam and Eve, gods did not exist. What are gods? They're inventions. They're man-made inventions. The book of Isaiah talks about how a man goes into the forest. He cuts himself a tree. He cuts part of it off and he burns it for wood and cooks his food on it. The other part he carves into a little god. He puts it up. And he, okay, you're my god. And he sets it up and he bows down and worships it. It's just an abomination. Then people, they conceive a god. Then they develop a religion around that god. It's all conceived. So Adam and Eve, they didn't have anybody else there conceiving any gods. They didn't have to have, there were all no gods before him. There are no other gods on his par. "You shall have no other gods in front of me, beside me, you know, in front of me." So a religion is set up and they didn't have anybody concocting religion, so they didn't need this. They only had God, and God was talking to them, and God created them, and God had him, you know, name all the animals. The second command, "You shall not make for yourself an idol of any likeness of anything," you know, whatever is in heaven above or in earth beneath or from the water under the earth. You see that in verse 4 of Exodus 20. So "You shall not make a likeness of anything to bow down to it and serve it." Well, Adam and Eve, they named everything. You know, bring an animal up here and name it. What do you call it? Whatever he called it, that's what its name was, you know, in the Hebrew. And so this is what they did. He named all the animals. He didn't worship any of them. He was the master. He was over that to rule over the earth. That's what God told the man and the woman. You're here to rule over it, not to be subject to it. So did they need a command that says you shall not bow down to anything? They needed to bow down to God, but I doubt that they even had a tendency to do that. They were communing with the eternal God directly. God was talking to them. God walked in the garden. God talked to them. They even knew the cadence of God's walk. Third command, "You shall You know, not take the name of the Eternal, your God, in vain. And by the way, there's, you know, this thing of showing kindness to the loving to you and your generations after you. And they didn't have any generations. It's just husband and wife. You know, they didn't have any generations after them. You shall not take the name of the Eternal, your God, in vain. For the Eternal will not leave him unpunished who takes his name. Now, the idea of taking God's name in vain was to, you're not supposed to swear. You're not supposed to take an oath by any other god. You're not supposed to use God's name in an oath and do it vainly. You're not supposed to take a vow in any other name. And when you take it in God's name, you're not to take it vainly. It's not talking about a curse word as we think of it, although it can apply to that. But that's not the original statement of taking God's name in vain. You don't take God's name in a vain way and use it for nothing. When you're not going to do it, you're not going to fulfill this vow. Now, I don't know why they needed to take a vow, why they needed to do anything on that. Usually it was swearing an oath, and you swore an oath, and you don't take God's name in vain when you swear an oath. The Sabbath command, naturally, God rested on the seventh day, but we don't see any giving of any commands to God, to Adam and Eve. Now, if you want to conjure up more than is in the scriptures, that's fine. I don't conjure up more than is in the scriptures. I just say, basically, there it is. This is what he said. This is what he did. And he did not give them a whole lot of instruction on the Sabbath day. There were no commands about the Sabbath day. There were no servants. You shall rest, you and your servant, your manservant, your ox, your ass, you know, there's no servants. Honor your parents. You know, you shall, you know, honor your father and mother. Well, they only had God. They didn't have a mother. Adam had no mother-in-law. Eve had no mother-in-law. They had no mother at all. They had God. And he was the only parent they had. Now, how do they honor them? That your days may live long, that you may live long on the land. You honor your parents. And that had to do with, you know, when this command was originally given, it wasn't given to little kids. You know, now right now, little Johnny, you must honor your mother and father. That's not where the command was given. The command was given to adults. This was command from God, Mount Sinai, the burning, fiery mountain. And God spoke to all these people, honor your parents. Why? Because when you set an example of honoring your parents, then your children will hear your example and come back to honor you. You neglect your children, your parents, will your days be long on the land? Your children have to take care of you and will honor you. You shall not murder. That's the other command. You have the seventh day. Now you honor your parents. Now you shall not murder. Well, okay, who we're going to murder? Either he kills Eve or she kills him, but I don't think so. They're just newlyweds. Most people newlyweds don't kill each other. And they seem to love each other. And he took her and he was just thrilled with her. You shall do no murder. Didn't have anybody else to murder. You shall not commit adultery. Well, Adam, where are you going to go? You know, there are no brothels. There ain't no women. It's pretty tough to commit adultery. So I don't know how you're going to do this. I don't think that God would have to give them this command when it's just two people. Why do you need a command like that? There were no incest laws. You know, it's hard to do it when you just have two people. You shall not steal. All right, Adam, you shall not steal. Well, God gave him everything. What does he need to steal for? Everything was his, except for the tree of the knowledge. And God didn't call it a stealing. He didn't call it, if you take that, you're stealing from me. He didn't use that word. He just said, you shall not eat of it, because the day you eat of it, you'll die. I'm just telling you why you shouldn't eat of it. He didn't tell him it was stealing. So everything was theirs. Everything was theirs. They could have anything except that one tree. They could have everything. Why would he need to steal? He owned everything. The garden was his. All the things were his. All the animals were his. Everything was his. Why would you need to steal? By the way, he didn't have to work too hard. That's why you didn't have to rest much on the Sabbath. He didn't. All the trees were there. All the fruit was there. All you had to do was pick it if you wanted something to eat. You didn't have to cultivate too much. You know, he dressed the garden and keep it. But you didn't have to work too hard. You shall not bear false witness. You know, and by the way, the stealing command. You remember the stealing command? There's a lot in the stealing command when you go to the judgments. After the stealing command, then you have the judgments. What if you steal a sheep? Well, what if you kill it? Well, then you have to replace it. Four sheep for a sheep. What if you take someone's trained ox and you return it to him? You know, you stole it, but he catches you with it and you return it. Then what do? You have to give him another ox. You have to pay for another ox and give it back to him. That's your penalty. And if you stole and you killed his trained ox, the one he had plowed with, you have to replace five oxen for that one ox. Five of them. That's a lot of money. That means you're an indentured servant, an indentured slave to this man until you pay off that amount of money. These are the laws that go, you know, the judgments after the Ten Commandments. But you didn't have anything to steal. All the oxen were his, all the cattle were his, all the horses were his, all the sheep were his, everything was his. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. He didn't even have a neighbor. He didn't have anybody. This was the law that had to do with justice. The only way you can have a justice system is if people honestly, truthfully say what they saw and hear and never bear false witness, never say something that is not true. That's the only way you can have a true justice system. And that's the only way we can in America, too. We now know that people perceive things differently, you know. And there was a famous experiment with the professor, you know, of psychology was there and his students in the classroom. And all of a sudden the door opens and the guy, you dirty rat, you know, this is what you get for destroying my life. Bang, bang, shoots a couple of shots. The professor falls down and the guy leaves and he says, death to tyrants. And he, you know, that's basically what John Wilkes Booth said when he shot Lincoln. He jumped down off the stage, death to tyrants. And that's what this guy says, death to tyrants. And he walks out. Well, the professor gets up. Of course, everybody's shocked in the classroom. And then the professor gets up and he says, okay, all right, I'm all right. Everybody's okay. Okay, what I want you to do right now, I want you to write down a description of what you saw. Describe the man that came in. How many bullets did he shoot? What did he say? What did he look like? How tall was he? These descriptions were unbelievably different from one another. The perception that we think that we see with our eyes, we think, but some descriptions were so far off from the reality that when they brought the guy back in, people were like, oh no, I thought he was this tall, I thought it was that. And people's perceptions were extremely different. So sometimes witnessing is subject to a great deal of emotional distress and distortion. You shall not bear a false witness. Now, false witness is not subject to distortion. Only true witnesses are subject to distortion. Why? Because a false witness has already decided in his head what he's going to say, that it's a lie. There were no witnesses. There was no justice system. Adam and Eve didn't need this. And the 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. Well, he had no neighbors. Neighbor didn't have a house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Well, the neighbor didn't have any wife. There was no wife to covet. You shall not covet your neighbor's manservants, men servants, women servants, his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbors. Well, I got no neighbors. They don't own anything. I got it all. I don't need the word to covet. Let me ask you a question. What can you do when you're alone? When you're all by yourself, what can you do? How can you act? Well, I'll give you an example. For instance, now see, When Molly's home, she likes to fix the bed. When Molly left one time, she had to go visit her relatives. I stayed at the house for a few days by myself. I never fixed the bed. I don't fix the bed. I said to myself, I fix it, I'm just going to have to pull the covers back the next night and get in. So I just put the covers back and I jump in, pull the covers over me. And that's it. I don't need to fix the bed. Now, when Molly's not there, I don't necessarily need to take the dishes off the counter. You understand? I can do it. I can live any way I want, you know? And if I were all by myself and there's a jar of peanut butter, I can dip it in with my finger just like this. I can live any way I want and nobody... I mean, I'm all by myself, right? I don't need to share the peanut butter. Now, if she's there, she's going to say, don't do that, David. Don't put your finger in the peanut butter. You know, I have to eat out of it too. And of course, so when I'm all by myself, what can I do? I can play the stereo as loud as I want. I can put the Stan Kenton clashing dissonant jazz on and play it loud. But if she's there, I cannot do that. Because she starts to scream and, you know, makes it a little nervous and all that stuff. But so there's a lot of things you can... What can you do when you're all alone by yourself? You don't have to have many rules, do you? You can do whatever you want. Throw my clothes on the floor if I want. Not pick them up if I want. Not put that away if I want. If I'm reading a book, I just leave it wherever I'm reading it. I can leave it right there. But see, when she's in the house, she doesn't like that. That bothers her. It gets in her way. She trips over things that I throw down on the floor, and so I have to pick it up. You understand? When you're by yourself, you can do anything. I can sing as loud as I want. I can run around the house and do whatever I want. I can eat as I'm going into this room or that, because I'm by myself. What can you do when you're alone? Virtually anything. Because there's nobody else to bother. There's nobody else. You know the difference between Texas and California? Yes, you do. Don't tell me you don't know the difference. Texas is over there and we're over here. That's one of the differences. But when you go to Texas, you can buy a little acre of land real easy. Most towns are here, and as you leave the town, you're not in the town anymore. Try leaving this town. As soon as you leave this town, you're right in another town. There's no, you ever notice that? If I leave Pasadena, guess where I'm at? I'm in Arcadia, I'm in Monrovia, I'm in South Pasadena, I'm in Alhambra, I'm surrounded. When I'm in Downey, when I leave Downey, then I'm in Long Beach, then I'm in La Mirada, then I'm in this one, I'm on Norwalk, I'm in Paramount. When I leave a town, I'm right back into another town. But in Texas, when you leave a town, where are you? You're out in the country. You're what we call country. So you can buy an acre, and you can build a house on it any way you want to build it. There are no codes. You can build it out in the country. You can build it with this kind of wall. You can put your own electrical stuff in it the way you want to. You don't have to call for an inspector. Try building a house here. You'll find out that you need your workers will say, well, you need a code. You need to get you need a permit. You need a code permit. You need this permit. You need an electrical permit. You need a plumbing permit. You need a plumbing inspection. You need this and then you need a roofing inspection. You need that inspection. You got to have all these inspections and codes to conform. Why? Why do we have that? Because we live close to one another. We can't take a chance that you're going to build your house and it will catch on fire and catch my house on fire. You got to have the code. You got to protect me. See, when you're all by yourself, you're going to do whatever you want because you're protecting just you. But when you have to be next to me, you need to form to the code so it doesn't bother me. And that's the situation. So in Texas, you have people they can build a church. They buy the property. They just build a church. They don't need a permit. They just build it. have somebody come out with the steel walls and put it up and bang, bang, bang. They have a church just like that. They can build churches out there just like that quickly. But here's the principle. When the more people that are around you, the more your freedoms are restricted and the more laws that take place. The more people, the more laws. You know, you ever get in an elevator and you're all by yourself? Stand right in the middle of the elevator. You can even do jumping jacks in an elevator. You can do jumping jacks if you like. You know, I sometimes do that in an elevator and bounce it up. If Molly's with me, she just gets this. Don't do that. Don't do it. That's scary. You're scaring me. You're scaring me. She thinks it's going to fall to the ground. You know, and it doesn't. But you can bounce on it. You know, but if you get in an elevator, you can do anything you want by yourself. Two people walk into the elevator. My space is restricted. I can't do this. Three people walk in, four people, five people, six people, seven people, eight people, 10 people, 12 people. Now I'm huddled. My arms are down to like this. I am trying not to touch the person next to me, and they're standing right next to me, and somebody's standing in front of me. I may be up against the wall in the back of me, or somebody's standing right behind me. I can't step back. I can't move my arms. I am now necessarily restricted because of the number of people. I have less and less freedom, do I not? I can't just do it. I can't yell. I can't whistle. I can't be the one that whistles in an elevator if there are 15 people in it. You see, my freedoms are necessarily restricted. The more people you have in an elevator, the more restrictions. So as the Israelites, so Adam and Eve, hardly any laws. As the population of the earth started to move more and more, then there were these murders and other things, and all of a sudden now you need the laws. When the Israelites finally were captive, you know, that one family, Jacob's family went down to Egypt, then they expanded into a big nation, 3 million people, and then they came out of Egypt, and then they went, and God had to give them at Mount Sinai, I'm going to make a covenant, and this is how it's going to be. Here are the laws. Now, you might be surprised. The main word in the Hebrew is Torah. Torah means God's basic instruction of the way you're to live, the Torah. But there are seven other Hebrew words used as synonyms for the Torah. Seven other Hebrew words that have slightly different meanings. Here's one called mitzvah, and it means a command. It's used in Exodus 15:26. I won't turn there. It's usually understood to be a specific instruction from God to be obeyed rather than as a general law. In other words, I'm going to give you this specific instruction. I'm commanding you to go over there, do this, you know, to scrub the floor, clean the floor, you know, fix the bed. And all, that's a specific instruction. It's called a mitzvah. There's a second one called a mispat, M-I-S-P-A-T, if you were transliterated. It means a judgment or an ordinance. It is a term with a variety of meanings, and it is sometimes used in a singular or an abstract sense. And on other occasions, it describes a judicial decision that you will see, and you'll see it in Deuteronomy 16. I'll read that in a minute. The plural of this designates enactments such as a larger corpus of law. In other words, this word, mispat, has to do with a precedent. What did you decide before in this situation? A precedent. You might say it's a very good translation of the word precedent. Here's another one called edut or hidut, E-D-U-T. It has to do with an admonition or a testimony. It is a general word for God's law in general. It exhibits the manner of his dealings with his people. Thus, the ark of the testimony, okay, the ark of the edut, the testimony, because it contained the testimony or the tablets of the law that constitutes the basic of the law of Israel. So it would be a word that you would say like Torah. Here's a fourth word called hukim. Hukim. H-U-Q-Q-I-M. Hukim. It means statutes, oracles. It's a general word describing law. It apparently designates something that is engraved and therefore established unchangeably as a statute by the lawgiver. Such statutes, when mentioned in connection with the priesthood, were mandatory for worship. And when they were formulated by the state, they had the force of a royal pronouncement. So you can see those mentioned in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 4, Deuteronomy 4, 1, describes the entire scope of the law. They called statutes. Another one called Pikudim, P-I-Q-Q-U-D-I-M, is a transliteration. It means orders, precepts. It's used only in Psalm 19, verse 8, and Psalm 103, verse 18. So it's almost never used except in the book of Psalms. Here's the word. It's actually, the word is word. It's debar, D-A-B-A-R, debar. And it means word. Would you be surprised that the Ten Commandments are called the Ten Debars, the Ten Words? They're translated Ten Words. And they are the basis of the covenant, the Ten Words. We use the word commandments, but the word, they are literally debar. The commentators have remarked frequently that this usage emphasizes the revelatory nature of the pronouncements, whereas the word commandment tends to stress their authoritarian aspect. Only in the sense that the words are the revelation of the divine will for the Israelites can they lay claim to the authority that necessarily characterizes a commandment. So, here's another word, the debar. The ten words, we call them the commandments. Dat, D-A-T. It's an Aramaic word. It's used in Ezra, Daniel, because those books were written in Aramaic. And it basically means a royal edict, a public law. For instance, when the king, says, okay, I'm going to make this law, that's a dat, D-A-T. So those are the seven words that are beyond... You know, in addition to the word Torah, which is the general word. Now, in the Greek, the word is nomos. The Greek word for Torah is almost always translated nomos, which means the word law. That's what Paul says about the law. He uses the word nomos. Now, there are laws. You think of the many laws as the Israelites multiplied. You had laws protecting the family. So you had sexual taboos. You had taboos against approaching someone next of kin. In-laws, approaching relatives. These were forbidden. Now in the time, Abraham and Sarah were very close cousins. And then you have people that almost had to go back to take sisters back all the time of Adam and Eve. But that stopped. Approaching someone next of kin, the more people. No. Taboos and incest, relationships with close relatives, adultery, taking a neighbor's wife or husband, rape or forced sexual crimes were all dealt with in the books, in the books of the law. They're all dealt with. Personal injuries. Did Adam and Eve need these? Personal injuries. You had the goring of an ox. Someone's ox gores you. If it had been known to gore, how about if you leave a pit uncovered? You dig a pit and you leave it uncovered. Someone falls in it. You are responsible because you neglect it. Now look, if I'm all by myself on my own farm, I can have a pit. I'm the only guy in the world. I can have a pit, and it's up to me. If I fall in, it's all my own stupid fault. I forgot where I dug the pit. But you don't have to have a law for me, because I'm all by myself. All right, so you have the goring of an ox, an uncovered pit. How about when two men fight, and one of them hits a woman that's carrying a child. There's a judgment on that. There's a judgment. What do you pay this woman if you caused her miscarriage? Two men fight and they hit this woman. Battery laws. The lex talionis, that is the compensation and how much can you retaliate laws. You know, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, stripe for stripe, you know, foot for foot, hand for hand, all that. That law was a law of restriction as to how much you can return a retaliatory, it restricted your retaliating. It was not that you have to knock the eye out, but it had to do with how much you can do. You cannot do more to that person than they did to you. That person cut your hand off, you cannot chop his head off. That's just not the way it is. It has to be equal in authority. It restricts retaliation. So you have all these homicides in the Bible, killing by accident. What if a person kills somebody else by accident as opposed to murder? Then they flee, you know, because they had the avengers of their family want to avenge and they flee to the city of refuge. They have all those laws set up. Adam and Eve needed none of these. None of these. What about an unsolved murder? The Bible talks about an unsolved murder. You have somebody's dead, it's an unsolved murder. How do we deal with that? Theft. Compensation for theft. The cultic laws. Cultic laws of pure cloth, pure seeds. You can't sow your garden with different seeds. None of these did Adam need. He wasn't there. He didn't have to deal with that. Debts and slavery. And you have a slave and you hit him in the eye. You got to let him go free. Or if you knock his tooth out, you have to let him go free for the sake of his tooth. He can redeem himself. Adam didn't need any of these. These are laws upon laws upon laws of justice and judgment and righteous laws too. But they're for people when you get crowded and you have lots of people. The more people, the more issues, the more restrictions and laws. That's just the principle of life. Property laws, laws regarding slaves, ownership, treatment, laws regarding the Sabbath, land Sabbaths, laws regarding birds, animals, laws regarding seeds, cloth, eating of meat that dies of itself, and so on and so on and so on. All these laws, Adam didn't need them. He didn't use them. He'd be surprised that you got all these laws now. You know, and of course he lived 900 years, he knew you'd have them because the population increased a lot. In the book of Deuteronomy, here's what we have. Because you had to have judgment between people. Deuteronomy 16, verses 18 through 20. You shall appoint for yourselves judges and officers in all your towns, which the Eternal your God has given you, according to your tribes. They shall judge the people with righteous judgment. You shall not distort justice. You shall not be partial. You shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. Justice and only justice you shall pursue, that you may live and possess the land which the Eternal your God is giving you. So here were laws for judgment because people had conflicts. I think I did. I think he did that. You know, I mean, they're doing, you know, even if you have an accident, what happens when you have an accident, a car accident? They want to find out, well, who did this? Well, where was she? What was they? Where's he? And they want to find out who's responsible. But you have judgments. You go to court. You think this person gypped you. That person thinks they were right in assessing you or not giving you back your money. You take them to court. And somebody makes a decision. Why do we need all these laws? Because there are lots of people. We've got lots of people. Conflicting issues, things that happen. Your restriction, your freedom is restricted by the number of people. If you're the only one, you do what you want because you're not hurting anybody. Now here's what I believe are the eternal laws. These are the eternal laws that I believe always existed, always will. And that is the great commandment, the eternal, you shall love the Eternal your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul. I believe that Adam and Eve would have understood that that's also a command that they would have had. And then as soon as they had children, as soon as they started having other people, the second is like unto it. What is it? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. The Apostle Paul says this in Romans 13, verses 9 and 10. And if there is any, he lists some of the Ten Commandments. You know, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not do this, you know, you shall covet. And then he says, and if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying. Because every single command we have is summed up in this saying. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. That's why you can't have unlimited freedom. You can't have unlimited things. You have to have necessarily restrictions because you have to be loving your neighbor. You know, when I got married, when I was single, you know, I just felt like I was near perfect. I felt I was near perfect. I really did. I mean, I don't do this, I don't do that, I keep the Sabbath, I do this, I do that. I got married. And all of a sudden, it's like, I'm like the worst person in the world here. I mean, I've got all these problems and all these faults. Because, you know, you now have to love your neighbor as yourself. I can't do what I totally want to do when someone else is there. You shall love your neighbor. Now, here's the principle. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. So all the laws, every law has to do with whether you can do something that hurts your neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. All laws have to do with making sure you don't hurt your neighbor. Why can you build anything in Texas? Because you're the only neighbor. You got no neighbors close enough to hurt them. Here, restrictions are necessarily mandatory because your neighbor is just a few feet away from your house. And if your house catches fire, generally his will, the next will, and so on and so on. That's the principle. My feeling is, no, Adam and Eve did not know and did not hear the Ten Commandments as they were spoken from Mount Sinai. Never heard them. They came later. The more people, the more commands. The more people, the less freedom. Because we have to love our neighbors as ourselves.